Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and blessings to all. Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at winbridge.org. Our guest tonight is Cal Cooper, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, what's new for you today?
Well, I know this week we were both saddened to learn of the passing of Dr. Alexander Imich. And for those not familiar with Alexander, he was the world's oldest man. He was officially recognized, you know, as that. And he was 111 years old, lived here in New York. We've corresponded with him over the years. He was a member of Forever Family Foundation. And he was originally a chemist by profession, and in 1965 he turned to parapsychology. And he had a long career in parapsychology. He used to give out, as a matter of fact, the Imich Prize for Parapsychology Research for a bunch of years until he experienced some financial setbacks and had to give that up. But I remember, and I'm sure you do too, Fran, we went to a lecture in Manhattan. I forget the purpose of the lecture, but Alexander was not presenting there, but he was attending.
I think the lecture was in celebration of his 106th birthday.
Oh, I thought it was 105th. But in any event, it could have been 106th. But, you know, and it was nice. The organizers of the lecture had a big cake for him with 105 or 106
yeah.
on it, and it was nice. But so here he is. He's 106. He's spry. He walked there. He lived in Manhattan, and he was still getting around. And I went up to him just to say hello and reintroduce myself, and figuring, well, he's 106. I mean, I don't think he'd hardly recognize me. And I said, hello, Dr. Imich. I'm Bob Ginsberg. And he said, oh, Bob. He said, how you doing? It's wonderful work with the foundation. I just read the last newsletter. I love the article you wrote. And I was just blown away. I mean, the mental acuity, you know, at that age. He evidently retained it until the very end. I know one reporter asked him to what he owes his great longevity to, and he said, "I haven't died yet."
Yeah.
But interestingly enough, he did attribute in part his long life to his diet. He just didn't eat a lot of food, and that was one of the keys.
And he did just recently celebrate that 111th birthday.
So. Yeah. Well, you know, we always talk about quality of life, and, you know, he had a very good quality of
yeah.
life for 110 years, you know, so it reaches a point.
Well, I think this last year, too, the whole thing started with a fall, and from then he was around for a very short period of time following the fall.
Yeah, he passed at home, you know, peacefully, and he didn't require, you know, round-the-clock care until the weeks preceding, you know, his death. So we mourn his passing, but if anybody will be doing work or communicating from the other side, it's Alexander, so
hey.
We all look forward to hearing
everybody,
from you.
Turn on your recorders. Let's get some some EVP.
Yeah. There was another story that you just mentioned to me before we went on the air. There was a news story here in New York of a horrible, another horrible crime.
Yeah, there was a guy just going around the streets murdering people, just randomly, with stabbing them to death with a knife, but not adults. He was going after children for a while, and I think that was the great tragedy of what had happened. He got into an elevator with two little kids. I think one was six and one was seven, and murdered them both. And this was last week, and the funeral was last Friday. And it was interesting when they when the news reporters spoke with the mother. This was what she said, and this is a direct quote. Everything, she said, my baby came to me in my dream last night and said, everything will be all right. Don't stop. Don't give up. And it's interesting that she felt comfortable enough in the crowd and on the air to share a dream visit.
Yeah. And it's interesting on so many levels. You know, we hear so often that right after somebody's passing, you know, could be hours or in the days after, they come to their loved ones in such a dream visit. And it's also interesting to note that here was a baby that was communicating very clearly in adult language. So it's clear that there's no aged soul, you know, on the other side. So, and when something like that happens, I don't think you really care what other people think, right? You have an astounding thing and a communication, you know.
And you know that from your own experience. When you have these dream visits, you know that it was the deceased loved one that came to you. You know that it was real. And in this culture in which we live, for the most part, people won't share it because it's not generally accepted. So I thought it was you know, maybe she just needed to share that because it was so real for her, and she wanted everybody to know that he's still here.
Mm. And, you know, another example how, you know, tragedy is the trigger for these things. You know, who knows if this woman ever had anything happen like that before, or whether she was intuitive by nature or even believed in any of this. And but now she does, and she will. And,
right.
And it's wonderful when people can openly discuss it, because as we talk about many times, that's the only way that effectively you'll open up people's minds to the reality of these other realms, and that death is not final. You know, we have a wonderful guest tonight that we're going to be bringing on after the break, Cal Cooper, who will also be able to shed some light on this. And we're going to be talking about some specific phenomena, including phone calls from the dead. And there's another example, as we're soon going to find out. If you get a phone call from the other side, that's not a call that you're likely to forget.
That's true.
Yeah. So stay with us. We come back.
You'll hear more about the unseen world from our guest, Cal Cooper.
Okay.
Stay tuned.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
Have you lost a loved one and feel that they are gone forever? Do you sometimes wonder how people can continue meaningful lives after devastating grief takes hold? Come join Forever Family Foundation in Connecticut on July 25th through the 27th, as they host a special, all-inclusive weekend of sharing, learning, exploring, and discovering. This weekend will not only deal with the challenges of loss and grief, but professional facilitators and mediums will also focus on ways we can all communicate with deceased loved ones and maintain our relationship with them. Attendees will be experiencing grief recovery techniques, spirit communication by certified mediums, meditations, psychic development exercises, and will also learn about some of the scientific evidence that we survive physical death. The weekend will feature small workshops for a relaxed and hands-on experience. Bereaved parents can also register for a separate program starting on the evening of July 24th through the 25th. For more information, visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. That's www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org, 631-425-7707.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death. Heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word, .com.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken, even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just tuning in, our guest tonight is Cal Cooper. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at winbridge.org. Bob?
And we're excited to have Cal with us. I was going to say tonight, but Cal's coming to us from the UK, where it's the wee hours of the morning, so we appreciate him joining us. Cal spent much of his early life reading up on the paranormal. He later developed an interest in human behavior and the many questions we always want to ask about the mind and its capabilities. Cal received much media interest from his research into phone calls from the dead after he received the Eileen J. Garrett Scholarship from the Parapsychology Foundation in 2009. He holds a bachelor's in psychology from the University of Northampton, a master's in psychology from Sheffield Hallam University, and he's currently based at the University of Northampton, pursuing doctoral research in psychology and parapsychology. He's also a lecturer at the university on subjects such as parapsychology, thanatology, and ancient mysticism. He has many areas of interest in psychology, including research methods, beliefs, motivation, and emotion, and the psychology of death. He's most recognized for his research into survival of death, psychic abilities, poltergeist apparitions, and hauntings. And the book we're going to be discussing is Telephone Calls from the Dead. His website is very complicated, calcooper.com, C-A-L-C-O-O-P-E-R.com. Welcome, Cal.
Thank you very much, Bob. I'm so impressed you got through that in one breath and without a single mistake.
You know, I just was choking on my side. You know, when we're very proud that you're going to be presenting at our upcoming conference here in the States in North Carolina in November, and you're going to be representing the British Society for Psychical Research. a lot of people, I'm sure, many of our listeners are totally unaware that there has been scientific study of paranormal phenomena since 1882. So mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about the Society for Psychical Research?
Well, you could even argue that there was one just before that. And a colleague of mine, Steve Parsons, talks about that quite a lot because he's a member of that. So before the Society for Psychical Research was also the Ghost Club, which is still going to this day, and that was set up arguably around the 1860s, but it's kind of lost into history whether that was the actual date of formation, whether it was the 1860s. But we definitely know with the Society of Psychical Research, that was a more formal academic institution. It was set up in 1882 thanks to a group of Cambridge scholars, namely Henry Sidgwick, Frederick Myers, Edmund Gurney, and these were people that were skilled in early philosophy, psychology, and physics. And it was the rise of spiritualism, or at least towards the end of the 1800s, this was where spiritualism was becoming very popular. And some of these scholars wanted to say, okay, people are reporting these abilities to contact the dead, or they claim that they live in a haunted house, or people say that they've seen apparitions. No one's really bothered to look at this before, at least not from a kind of group perspective, a load of experts getting together from various fields and trying to actually devise some form of hypotheses for these phenomena. So that's where the Society of Psychical Research came from. They gathered together, and from the very starting point in 1882, they formed different committees. There was the Haunted House Committee, the Hypnotism Committee, all different kind of issues of paranormal phenomena back then. There was a specific committee within the SPR that dealt with different things. And even today, we have a few different committees. There's just not so many, but it's still going strong today.
And you mentioned some heavy hitters in the world of parapsychology there. So in that climate back in 1882, did these professionals face the same scorn from their peers that a lot of today's scientists face?
That's a really good question and something that I should really read into, but it's like a complete guess on it was... I wouldn't have thought so, because even though they come from Cambridge, they'd formed this society more or less independently. It hadn't got its name attached to the university, more or less. Even today, though, Cambridge is still a little bit, when you go there and you ask to go and see the SPR files, there are some librarians that are very much interested in the SPR history, but there are others who clearly aren't. And those are the people who don't believe that paranormal phenomena has any place within working science whatsoever. So there are some people that are quite ashamed, perhaps, that the files are kept there. You can see this controversy more so in the 1930s when Joseph Banks Ryan and his wife Louisa Ryan took psychical research and gave it more of a sort of professional term, a term that had first been coined in Germany, and that was parapsychology, incorporating the paranormal and psychology. So the term para meaning beyond, so beyond psychology. All these issues of psychic phenomena, people seeing information before it happens, predicting future events, or being able to read someone's mind. Can we take that, harness it, and put it in a controlled condition where we can run tests over and over again and verify it? And, of course, they received controversy, a lot of controversy, but the good thing was the heads of the department in the university at the time, William McDougall, he was very kind of much into parapsychology. He was very for the research. So it thrived. The problem was there were people that came and went that were various kind of heads of the departments that didn't like it, and that's what kind of stops and starts parapsychology along the way. It's been doing this for the kind of 150 years that it's been about. It's kind of been thriving in some areas because people support it, and then in other areas it's failed because people at the top of the chain don't really like what's going on without any real good reason.
Is there more research in parapsychology going on in Great Britain today than there is in the US? It seems to me like there might be.
Certainly right now, yes. At one point, and again, that's going back, the USA was absolutely thriving. And I think I did a radio show about a year and a half ago where they were convinced that the USA weren't studying it anymore. That's not true. There are a couple of places that are still offering academic study of parapsychology that I know of. And one is the University of West Georgia. My colleague, Dr. Christine Simmons Moore, lectures there on two different modules of parapsychology. And Jake Glazier and Erica Pratt, they also are postgraduates there as well, and have set up a research journal. So there is parapsychology thriving there. And also at Atlantic University, they offer a master's in transpersonal studies. And that has a module which is taught by Lloyd Auerbach, who you're both very much familiar with.
Right.
So those are the two places. But in the UK, though, we have at least two dozen universities that are catering for parapsychology, and that's either because a degree in psychology or anthropology or sociology or even physics might have a module that focuses on paranormal phenomena or specifically parapsychology. And aside from those, there are universities that have parapsychologists working there who are willing to take on a master's dissertation, undergraduate dissertation, or even a PhD on topics of parapsychology. So it's a lot more free in terms of study.
Now, I mentioned your book, Telephone Calls from the Dead. Now, you're actually continuing the research of Scott Rogo and Raymond Bayless. So I guess a good place to start was tell us a little bit about them and what they studied.
Well, both of them have been labeled as parapsychologists in the past, but that wasn't kind of strictly the case. Raymond Bayless, they were both based in California in the Hollywood area. Raymond Bayless was a landscape painter, and Rogo's background was in music. Both a big age gap between them, about a 30-year age gap, in fact. And Raymond Bayless started out more or less in psychical research by becoming intrigued as to whether you could actually record direct voice phenomena of mediums within a seance room setting. And the specific medium he was using was a guy called Attila Vonzele, who was an acclaimed astral projector. He claimed that he could freely let his astral body leave and travel to certain locations, whereupon in some instances, which have been documented, people saw an unusual form in that location, and the two accounts are verified. So Raymond Bayless took this guy to this recording studio that they set up in Hollywood, soundproofed the whole place, created this wooden cabinet with some recording devices inside and outside, with the hope that once Attila Vonzele was inside the cabinet and started to produce these independent voices, when he left the cabinet, they would still be recorded. And this was the first discovery of EVP in 1956, and the first report was published in 1959. Little is known about that because the founder of EVP is reported to be Frederick Jurgensen, who discovered it 3 months after the publication of Bayless's report. But that's another story. And Rogo came along towards the end of the 1960s. He was about 17, 18, really keen in parapsychology, and became an apprentice to Raymond Bayless and learned from him, because Raymond Bayless had an incredible knowledge for psychical research. And Scott did his undergraduate degree in music. But he published his first book as an undergraduate on paranormal spontaneous music occurring in different locations of people. So people suddenly going to bed and hearing a piano playing, but not knowing where that piano sound's coming from and not tracking it down. Otherworldly music. So that's basically who they both were.
Mm. So when we talk about a telephone call, ostensibly from a discarnate entity, does it differ from EVP or electronic voice phenomena only in the sense that it's not being recorded, it's a live voice, so to speak?
I think there are greater differences between EVP and telephone calls than people might think. I mean, certainly you've hit the nail on the head that one is spontaneous and the other one's sought. You actively seek out making a recording whereby you might record voices alleged to be that of the dead. And therefore, you know, you've obtained the recording. The telephone call you didn't expect to happen. The thing is, though, when you hear the majority of EVPs back, or even some of the classic ones by Dr. Konstantin Radova or some of the other documented ones, you can hear the voices, and yeah, a word or phrase might be very distinct, but they're not that great, not compared to what people are reporting in the telephone calls, which is a full telephone conversation of complete clarity, so much so that you wouldn't be able to distinguish, in many cases, a phone call from the dead compared to that of a normal phone call. It just sounds like you're having a conversation. In some of the unusual cases of telephone calls from the dead, even though some of them, they're all unusual by their very nature, but the unusual characteristics of the calls, people have reported when it is a dead person calling that the voice is very faint or very hollow or sounds distant, as though someone was at the other side of the room and maybe shouting across the room for their voice to be heard, and also static is heard on the line. But even so, the voice is very clear, and you can have, in some instances, up to a half-hour conversation. So completely different from the EVP. And in some rare instances, people have managed to record a telephone call from the dead or had a voicemail message from the dead as well.
Mm. I know that in telephone calls from the dead, in your new book, you go into great detail as you classify the types of calls that have been reported. There are many different types. So is it typical of the most common type of call where the actual ringing of the phone would be heard and a rather long conversation takes place?
It varies, and this is something that I probably kind of I approach the same error that Rogan Bayliss got brought up on, and I was trying to make the book as publicly accessible as possible, but I didn't want to overload it with statistics, otherwise people wouldn't have been interested. But I think in the long run, some more statistics sort of helped clarify what was going on. And in the majority of cases, you have typically someone who is bereaved, they're aware a close friend or relative has died, and when they have a telephone call, they are as well typically alone when it occurs. But in their report of what happened, sometimes they say it was only the landline telephone that was closest to them that actually rang. Not the hall telephone, not the one on the landing up the stairs or in one of the bedrooms. It was the one that they were closest to. And in some of those cases, the telephone ringing sound wasn't the normal sound that it produced. If it was an old Bakelite telephone, the bell inside the hammer wasn't hitting at the normal speed. It was reduced and a lot lower. Mm. And upon picking up the telephone, they just get the odd few words or phrases, so much so that they could recognize who it was, but the voice wasn't responding so much. But these are specifically in the cases where you are aware someone has died and you're suffering a bereavement. And then right. You have different call categories that come up beyond that, which are more impressive, more lengthy, and there's a good two-way thing going on.
I recall some fascinating accounts in the book where people have received these calls from older or antique phones that were not hooked up to any power source or telephone line, and yet the phone call still occurred. So it reminds me of that fellow, I think his name is Bacci in Italy, who does EVP recordings using an old shortwave radio, and supposedly they took the tubes out of the radio, and he still received these communications. I guess it's a related phenomenon.
In a way. I've been questioned on Bacci's stuff a few times, even during a documentary that I was doing, and the amount of times that I've seen footage of him, I've heard the recordings, I've never ever, and some people will probably crucify me for it, but I've never really read into what Bacci's done. I just skimmed over the basics, and all I can do is just instantly sit in my skeptical chair on it. It's not something that I really pursued and looked at, but you're absolutely right. It's kind of got the same principle there. Yeah. And it was only last week, I think, I got another telephone call case that was sent to me. Yes, it was. It was actually for some work on my PhD, some of my data collection, where I'm looking into experiences people have had after suffering a bereavement, any kind of experience. And luckily enough, there were some more telephone call cases in that. And one account was of someone who was in hospital receiving a telephone call from his dead wife over a hospital telephone that had been known to have been broken and not been working for several years. And yet the staff at the hospital knew that every time it rung, it was typically from a dead person.
Mm. Now... Yeah, and a lot of people didn't want to answer that phone.
I want that.
Yeah.
The nursing staff just became so used to it that they were fully aware. They were the ones taking the call and then passing the message on to the patient. So it was very unusual.
Some cases involve these calls from discarnates where instead of having a regular conversation of where they tell them that they love them, where there's some sort of a warning or there's a timeliness to the message or something that the recipient of the call acts upon. Have you come across cases like that?
Sorry, you broke up a little bit there, Bob.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was talking about cases. Are there cases where somebody receives a call with some sort of a warning, you know, that there's a timeliness to the call, something that the recipient of the call can act upon?
Yeah, there's a few where people have received a call such as that, such as don't take that car journey this morning, walk or go on the train or whatever, cycle. And they don't know who the call's from or where it's come from, and they try and recall the caller's number. They dial up and find out who was calling, and there's no number comes through. And lo and behold, if they had have taken that car journey, that very route, there was a big car pileup, and they could have potentially been involved in that and been killed. Some of the more common ones, though, which are unusual, is not only does someone receive a telephone call from the dead, but that dead caller has called to give a warning about such an event. So they are semi-common. There's a few that came up in the recent collection that I included in the book, and as I'm still collecting cases now, I'm sure when I go back to analyse a larger set, there'll be more cropping up. But there was one unusual one, which is where we have paranormal calls from people that are living, just as we have apparitions of living people as well in certain parapsychological phenomena. And there was a case outlined in my book that came from the autobiography of Linda Lovelace, who was a big porn star over in the USA, and she wrote her autobiography, which was called Ordeal. And she was in a very abusive relationship for a certain period of her life, and she got to the point where she was more or less terrified of her partner. They'd gone out somewhere, she was really nervous of his attitude, he was really pushing her around and very physical with her. It was a complete case of domestic abuse. And they'd gone to some motel somewhere as well, but not told anyone where they were actually going to. And she just kept thinking she wishes that her father was there to kind of basically sort her husband out and help her get out of the mess that she was in. She wasn't mentally strong enough to break away from him. And so they're at the motel, and all of a sudden a knocking came at the door, and lo and behold, her mother and father are there, and she asks, you know, what are you doing here? And her father said, you called me and said that you were in trouble, you needed to get out, and blah, blah, blah. And so a warning call had come in to her father from her, but she never actually made a call throughout any of that time period. But she'd been thinking on this this ordeal, the fact that she needed her father there. So at some point, this paranormal call takes place, which is represented as her, to her father, so her father can go to her aid.
It's extraordinary. So it's really a case of PK, it seems like, you know, where the thought can manifest physical objects. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the theories that Rogan Bayliss put to it. I mean, we can't instantly assume... It wouldn't be kind of rational to do that, to instantly say, okay, these seem to be phone calls from the dead, so that's exactly what they are. You know, we can look at the conventional explanations that maybe it's misinterpretation and grief might have something to do with it. If we've included those and we've understood them and we can rule them out, fine, then we've got to start to go into paranormal territory and look at what paranormal theories apply. And PK is the first one that you come to, the fact that maybe our mind has actually manipulated the telephone to create the call, to create the ringing, to create the bell movement inside the phone that gives you just that initial motivation to get up in the first place and go and answer the telephone. The majority of cases that I get sent to me where someone says, I had a telephone call from the dead, is nothing more than a ringing telephone and no one at the other end, and a relative having died, say, 24 hours beforehand, and they associate that as the relative trying to get in touch with them. It might not be, but, you know, is there an element of paranormal in there? The fact that they were grieving, and it was only at that time they had the telephone playing up, and it played up maybe for several days after that doing the same thing. At no other time had it done that, only around this bereavement. So is it PK sort of playing a role and sort of giving you a comforting message that they're continuing in some way? It's certainly a strong possibility if we can rule out some of those conventional explanations first.
Yeah, I suspect that it's a kind of like many of the things that we talk about. It's a combination, you know, even with mediumship. I mean, there are cases where mediums truly are communicating with the discarnate entities, and there's other cases where they're getting information telepathically or psychically. So it's and it's hard to distinguish between the two in many cases. So I'm sure that you've got a lot more research and work to do in that regard, as does everybody else. You know?
Well, it's absolutely difficult. I mean, when you get to that point, what you're describing is something that Dr. William Roll brought up. He produced the book The Poltergeist, but he wrote a brilliant article called The Catch-22 of Survival. And he was saying how we can get stuck so many times where we have this evidence that appears to be evidence for survival of death, yet normal psychic, well, I say normal, but psychic phenomena can explain it. So, you know, you have a medium that stood before you and they're giving you a reading about a relative that's passed on. But what's to say that via clairvoyance they haven't seen documented evidence at distance that their mind is picking up that does exist about that deceased person? Or telepathically, they're not obtaining that information from you. They're just not consciously aware of where the information is coming from. They just assume that it's coming from spirit. So you can just explain it via psychic abilities. You don't need to bring in any kind of explanation that the dead are doing it, unless that there's some specific dialogue going on whereby it does seem like you're getting instant feedback in it. It is the personality and characteristic types that would come from that deceased person. It'd have to build up. You'd have to have some substantial evidence rather than just a few names, a date, and circumstances of death. That's not enough to verify that you've got evidence for survival there.
Yeah,
you need it. Yeah,
I agree with you, and you know, it's hard to for the average person even to imagine if there is this vast field of information to extract a personality from that field. But
yeah,
we can talk more about that. We're talking with Cal Cooper. He's the author of Telephone Calls from the Dead. His website is calcooper.com. We're going to go to a short break, and we come back, we're going to have a lot more to talk about with Cal, so stay with us.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
Many people, just like you, hope that we continue to another existence after we die. It's a nice thought. But could it really be true? The answer is yes. There is an overwhelming amount of scientific evidence that tells us this is so. On July 29th, come hear medical doctor and university professor Dr. Piero Calvi Parasetti as he shares a visual presentation of the life after death evidence at Long Island University in Brookville, New York. Dr. Parasetti, also a noted psychotherapist and bereavement specialist and former humanitarian advisor to the United Nations, can show you how to turn simple hope into deep knowing. He will be joined in the second part of the evening by certified medium Laura Lynn Jackson, who will demonstrate spirit communication as further evidence of an afterlife. Advanced reservations are only $15 for members and $20 for non-members. For reservations and information, visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlak.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just tuning in, our guest tonight is Cal Cooper. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at winbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, it's time for some foundation updates for our listeners. Let me get to my first one here. To remind everybody that they can financially support the work of Forever Family Foundation, a 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization, without sending us a single pretty penny. When shopping on the Internet, think of us before you go to Amazon.com and instead go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and please use the Amazon link on our site to get to Amazon. There's one on every page of our website, and if you add that one simple step to your shopping, a dollar percentage of everything that goes into your shopping cart will generate a donation from Amazon to us. And if you don't shop on Amazon, that's not a problem either. There's another way to be certain that almost all your website shopping produces a donation to Forever Family Foundation. Visit iGive.com. Sign up. It's free. You can name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. And just like with Amazon, a portion of your spending results in a donation to Forever Family Foundation. Once you set it up, each time you shop on the Internet, iGive.com will automatically send us a donation when you shop in one of their more than 1,400 online stores that you are probably already shopping in, like Expedia, Hanes, J.Crew, Travelocity, or Yoga Accessories. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our annual grief retreat is set for the weekend of July 25th through 27th back at the wonderful Guest House in Chester, Connecticut. We've also added on a day just for parents who have lost children. Details are all up on the website, and it is a very special weekend of a small group of like-minded people sharing a very special journey. So if you want to be a part of this, make your arrangements early. You do not want to miss out on this meaningful experience. And if you'd like to save some money, we can put you into a double or triple with other attendees of the same gender. Reservations can be made via the event page on our website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. And many of our listeners already know that March had marked our 10th year as a 501c3 not-for-profit organization serving the world in our mission to prove that life continues even after the physical body dies. In celebration of this event, we're revisiting our very first event from 2004 with a 10-year update on the current research that supports the existence of the afterlife. Please join us on July 29th at Long Island University, where Dr. Piero Calvi Parisetti will present The Afterlife, A Scientist's View, and he will be followed by a demonstration of spirit communication for those in attendance by Forever Family Foundation certified medium, Laura Lynn Jackson. And lastly, the wait is over. Plan to get yourself to Durham, North Carolina for the biggest and best afterlife conference ever. It's a convention that includes the top organizations that have been dedicated to the investigation of life beyond this physical life. From November 6th through the 11th, we have loads of special things planned, including a day at the Rhine Research Center with a spoon-bending party. So visit our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, and make your reservations now. This will be a big one, and you don't want to miss out on all that pomp and circumstance. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Cal Cooper. He's the author of Telephone Calls from the Dead. The website is calcooper.com. So, Cal, I read a lot of interesting facts in your book, and one that I was a little surprised because I had never heard it before, that Albert Einstein was actually interested in J.B. Rhine's research at Duke. And is it true that Einstein attended a seance with Rhine?
Yeah, there's actually more kind of notable people involved in parapsychology at one time or other than people would care to think. So if we just focus on Einstein for now, when parapsychology had reached the university setting, late 1920s, early 1930s, he was very interested in what the Rhines were doing, and Rhine had some correspondence with him for a certain amount of time. And this is the period where the Rhines were still interested in seances and field investigations more so. Rhine was becoming very skeptical of them, that is J.B. Rhine. We know Louisa Rhine was interested in spontaneous cases, so she maintained an interest in it, but J.B. Rhine was putting on his skeptical hat and he was still giving them a chance. And there was this one particular one, I can't remember the names of the individuals involved, but he was quite fascinated by what was going on. They'd taken other colleagues along to this seance. They couldn't figure out how the medium was creating some of this physical phenomena. They'd checked the rooms and everything. They'd gone through the usual shebang to make sure that they had as much control as possible within the seance. So finally, they plucked up the courage to say, you know, this is possibly a very good, genuine case. Let's get Albert Einstein along to actually come and sit in on this and see for himself the kind of thing that we're looking into and the fact that science does need to look into it. So the correspondence got to Albert Einstein. He comes along. I think he brought a couple of his assistants with him or colleagues, and they sit in on the seance. And lo and behold, out of all the times J.B. Rhine and Louisa Rhine went along to this sitting, nothing happened this time. Nothing whatsoever.
Yeah, and that's
right. Because of that, Einstein lost all interest in parapsychology, or at least as far as I'm aware, he lost all interest, and he never became involved in it. We got no sort of great works from Albert Einstein in terms of contributions to parapsychology. And I think that's where J.B. Rhine also put his foot down, and he just had enough of the field investigations, and he focused full-time on establishing methodological ways of looking at ESP, establishing a good method for it and finding replicability within ESP.
It's all in the timing, I guess, you know. And yes. By the way, Sally Rhine will be presenting at the conference along with you, and she'll be talking about these spontaneous cases that her mother, you know, started. So that'll be interesting as well.
I look forward to that.
Yeah. Now, Thomas Edison, I mean, I hear it often that he attempted to build a device that could facilitate spirit communication. Is that true?
It's not true that he actually did it, though. It is true that he had an interest in it. And he was probably the third or fourth person to kind of speak out about it. The people before him had actually gone ahead and done it. There was people like David Wilson, who was a solicitor living in London. There was F.R. Melton, who was a psychical researcher and inventor living in Nottingham, here in my hometown where I'm at the moment, in the UK. And there was also a guy called Francis Grierson, who came from California and worked as a medium throughout Europe under the name of Jesse Shepherd. And he produced a device called a psychophone that was a popular device you could leave by your bed at night to play inspirational speech while you slept. And if you put it on reverse, you could record onto the wax cylinder people's speech. It was an early form of a dictaphone. And he developed this and used it in the seance room to record voices of the dead, a sort of direct telephone link, as it were, and produced a book. After this came Thomas Edison, who reported to an interviewer, to Scientific American, in 1920, that he was going to develop a device that could more so outbetter these previous ones. It would be more or less a direct telephone where you could pick it up and have contact with whoever you desire. And he stated within this interview that the instrumentation he was going to be using was going to be extremely delicate stuff, stuff that he probably hadn't even worked with before. So if the dead do indeed survive in some capacity, when you die, consciousness seems to separate from the body and is existing on its own, the instrumentation is so delicate it at least gives whatever remains a chance to get in contact with those that they've left behind. And he believed that if personality does exist after we've died and it retains all of its faculties, then why wouldn't you want to get in contact with the people that you've left behind? And he thought this is maybe why we do have mediums coming forward and why people do see ghosts. So can we actually develop a machine that can regularly sort of tune into these frequencies? But I think it was just getting on the bandwagon because other people had sort of beaten him to it. And, you know, brilliant inventor, produced so many things, was very famous. Imagine if you could actually produce a telephone that can contact the dead. Well, you're saying it can, and indeed it can do that. You'd make an absolute fortune if it could do that. And I think this is something that he was kind of getting at. But 11 years later, in 1931, Thomas Edison passed away, and there was no evidence of the machine whatsoever, no blueprints, no prototype. The Thomas Edison Museum in Texas, even today, its highest amount, or certainly for a long while, its highest amount of emails, letters and calls were for people wanting to see photographs or copies of blueprints of the telephone device. And in recent years, there's been people kind of teasing the media and saying that they've got the prototype or they've got the blueprints. These aren't genuine things. Thomas Edison never went ahead and actually developed one. Saying that, though, he was very interested in psychical research. He certainly was serious when it came to psychical research, and this became more so known after he died. All of his lab assistants were known mediums. He interviewed them and made sure that they had an interest in psychical research and were known mediums that were also skilled with the lab research he needed to put them to. Also, Thomas Edison's parents were spiritualists as well, so he'd grown up around this. But it's just another person who came and went in psychical research, and it would have been great to have more involvement from them.
Absolutely, and you're talking about making a fortune, but even more importantly, it would totally change our physical world.
It would.
People live their lives. Unfortunately, this has flown by. There's a lot more to talk about, but you're going to have to join us again, because I insist. We have been talking with Cal Cooper. The book, which I recommend you pick up immediately, is Telephone Calls from the Dead. There is a link to it on the website, an Amazon link on the Fervor Family Foundation website, and you can learn more about Cal and all his work and a lot of interesting things on calcooper.com. Cal, thanks so much for joining us tonight, and we look forward to talking with you again soon.
Sweet dreams.
Brilliant. Thank you, Bob and Fran, for having me. It's been absolutely brilliant, and I do hope people get the book and enjoy it. And also, the latest book is on my website as well, regarding Alex Tanner. So do check that out as well, Conversations with Ghosts.
And you can find that on calcooper.com. Good night, Cal.
Good night, Bob and Fran. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Thank you.
Take care.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from all participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind. As we visualize the healing light upon Nina, Andrea, Karen, Eddie Roll, Rita Dwyer, Tracy Lee Nash, Jean Lash, K. Tim Donahue, Vicki Steffi, Mark Barron, Rita Springer, David Hayes, Barbara Patillo, Christina DiDonato, Julie B., Marianne Pierschka, Jeanette Davies, Rachel Skandarian, Kimberly Saavedra, Ann Hutchinson, David Mello, Henry Stark, Johnny Jackson, Andy O'Brien, Tanya Cash, Stanley Mewling, Glenna Irwin, Lynn Austin, Michael Tim, Patty Potter, Eileen Lozada, Wendy Whippo, Barbara Russell, Tom Donahue, Philip McPhee, Gina DiDonato, Bobby Allison, Doug Berry, and Brian from Chico, California. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.